DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I don't know about you, but I'm sort of glad to turn the corner here. I'm kind of glad Middle Tennessee State is over. I'm glad Austin Peay is behind us here. I'm glad that we can now sort of look ahead through the rest of September and October and get into what I think of as a little bit more real football. No disrespect to the South Carolina game, which for Georgia was an incredible performance, and for South Carolina, that was a ranked team when Georgia played them. I think they'll be ranked again in the top 25 at some point. I think that's a real opponent, a real signature win for UGA, at least thus far in the season. But in a lot of ways, the real season begins now. Georgia on the road at Missouri on Saturday. That's a kind of a semi-interesting road game. A rival game against Tennessee after that. At LSU beyond that. And we start to, you know, kind of really figure out truly what Georgia is. For now, here's what we know. It's another blowout win on Saturday. Georgia now up to number 2 in the Associated Press poll. For those of you who kind of like sort of doing this stuff week to week, I'm kind of right there with you. I do sort of enjoy the beauty contest from week to week. I do think that Georgia right now has a more impressive resume than Clemson, the team that it leapfrogs there in the Associated Press poll. So I don't have any kind of real problem with that. I think Georgia went on the road to South Carolina a couple weeks ago, handled that team very easily. I think Clemson on the road a couple of weeks ago at Texas A&M. It's a win for Clemson, but overall it's not a great performance. Overall, there's a little bit of a shakiness there, so ranking Georgia ahead of Clemson right now sort of makes some sense to me. But as we kind of move ahead to Missouri on the road for Georgia on Saturday, and then sort of everything else that's going to happen beyond that, the real story for Georgia starts to be here, you know, how is Georgia going to look in comparison to Alabama as these two teams may be on a collision course with each other for first Saturday in December for the SEC championship? I mean, let's face it, you know, I'm sort of loath to give Alabama credit from time to time, but it did go on the road, beat Ole Miss 62-7. Now, I don't necessarily think Alabama's 62-7 win against Ole Miss is necessarily all that much more impressive than Georgia beating South Carolina 41-17 the other day. I think that South Carolina and Ole Miss are very different kinds of teams. I think when Ole Miss, who is not very good, when they lose badly, it's going to be in this fashion, giving up a whole bunch of points because they just don't play much defense. I think if you look at the way that Georgia asserted itself physically against South Carolina, that was, I don't want to say just as dominant because obviously the final score is glaring for Alabama against Ole Miss, but they are both dominant on the road against opponents that were completely overwhelmed, so I don't necessarily think Georgia takes all that much of a backseat there. But pretty clearly here for the next couple of days, that national conversation is going to be about Alabama. Boy, this is the best team in the country, maybe the best team that Nick Saban's ever had since he's been there. I think in a lot of ways, Georgia's probably just fine with that. And in a lot of ways, Kirby Smart in particular here is probably just fine with allowing the attention to go to the Crimson Tide and the praise go to Tua Tagovailoa. And then Georgia will bide its time, hopefully still being undefeated when these two teams get together maybe come December there. But that's obviously Georgia's job here this week when it heads to Columbia. Dogs about a, 2-touchdown favorite against Missouri. This is in a lot of ways another sort of beauty contest, another sort of moment to sort of put up a score and put up a performance that keeps Georgia in that conversation for truly being among the national elite. And with that said, too, let me also mention a couple things here as well. It's not just the SEC teams that I think that Georgia's going to be comparing itself to here. I think you look outside the region here for a moment. Ohio State gets Urban Meyer back this Saturday. They go into Fort Worth, Texas. They beat up on TCU, especially in the second half. That's a little bit of a resume-building win there for Ohio State. Frankly, the only one the Big Ten had this past weekend, but nonetheless, the Buckeyes probably solidified their spot in that national conversation. And I think you'll also keep looking at Oklahoma here a little bit as well. Struggled on the road against Iowa State, still a win though, and if you start thinking about, is there room for two teams in the SEC in the college football playoff, that's what you think about. A team like Oklahoma, is its resume as a potential Big 12 champion better than whatever the second team from the SEC looks like? But at this stage of the game here right now, this is the conversation we're having about Georgia. It's not talking about Georgia in comparison to SEC East teams like Missouri, who will play this Saturday, Tennessee, who it plays 2 weeks from now, South Carolina, who it's already played. Georgia's competition right now is not the SEC East. Georgia's competition right now is the national elite, the top 5 teams in the country, the teams that Georgia's ranked ahead of, or in the case of Alabama, the team that's ranked ahead of Georgia. That's the comparison, that's the conversation you have when you talk about the Georgia Bulldogs, and that's true for the game against Middle Tennessee State as well. And I don't know that Kirby Smart was necessarily thinking that when he spoke post first game. But there's something that Kirby Smart did say that certainly brings to mind this idea of how does Georgia look in relationship to previous national champions like Clemson, Ohio State, last year's reigning national champion like Alabama? Does Georgia look the part in comparison with these teams? Is Georgia playing to the level that these other teams play to? A word that Kirby Smart has used a lot lately is the idea of a standard, a sort of measure, an evaluation that doesn't change, that's at the top elite championship level. And it sounds like Kirby saw some of that from what he saw from his team against Middle Tennessee State on Saturday. Here he is on that subject.
They came out fast. They came out physical. They answered the challenge, which was to own the standard. We challenged them to say, hey, we're creating a standard here that you play to this level regardless of who you play. Now you got to go own the standard. And I really thought the players tried to do that.
You know, around here in the past, we've talked a lot about the idea of owning the East. That was obviously what Georgia's goal was for 2017. And we said to start the season this year, you sort of start right back there all over again, trying to own the East again for 2018. But for many of you, you said, hey, B.A., we've already seen Georgia do that. We saw Georgia win the division a year ago. And Georgia, yeah, may pile up a lot of division wins over the next few years against the East that right now still looks pretty mediocre. Maybe it's time for Georgia to think about something beyond just owning the East. And maybe you're right. Maybe instead of own the East, maybe Kirby's phrase here is actually better. Maybe it should be own the standard. Maybe that's the better overall phrase here of embracing what the expectations are for Georgia every single Saturday. So far, Georgia's met those expectations with flying colors. ESPN Stats and Info had a number. This is the first time since, I guess, 2012 that Georgia started a season three consecutive games with 40 or more points. I think that streak continues against Missouri on Saturday. This is a program that's playing to a level sort of established in 2017 when it made the college football playoff. Thus far, kind of keeping pace with that in 2018. But those comparative scores are going to continue as we move forward here. How does Georgia look? As good as Alabama? As good as Clemson? As good as Ohio State? Those are the questions we're going to be asking as Georgia travels down this path to the playoff once again here in 2018. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Good to have you with us on the program, no matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m. on the Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter feed, on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and in podcast form, wherever podcasts can be found, the Apple Podcast Player, the Google Podcast Player there for the Android devices, the world-famous DogNation.com. SoundCloud, wherever. We're just glad you're with us here on Dog Nation Daily today. Really appreciate Marco's Pizza being with us as well. And my tradition here on Sunday has kind of become the sort of, sit in front of the TV after being in Athens or being on the road with the dogs all day on Saturday. Try to sit home, get some rest, watch a little football. That means Marco's Pizza in my lap. Many of you feel the same way. And the best way for you to do that is by saying hello, Primo, by taking advantage of a great offer. Two medium, two-topping pizzas, everyday low price of just $6.99 each. With two medium, two-topping pizzas, everybody can kind of get what they want. Some of you have shared this with me on Twitter that, you know, you're much like my family where the mom and the daddy like one thing, the kids like something different. Well, the offer there from Marlo's Pizza will certainly give you a chance to do that. And for those of you that sat around, watched a little football yesterday, hope you enjoyed that. It's great to have Marco's Pizza here with us today on Dog Nation Daily and every day on the program. We'll get Chip Towers here coming up in just a moment. We'll get his thoughts on what happened between Georgia and Middle Tennessee State on Saturday. Let me also share some more of kind of the takeaway from the game against the Blue Raiders as we go around the doghouse here, brought to you today by Pella Window and Door. And I guess there are a couple sort of big stories to sort of unpack from the weekend here. We did not see a lot of Georgia running back DeAndre Swift. Has a couple carries here early in the game and then really doesn't tote the football at all anymore. Seen on the sideline, but, you know, no helmet in hand, nothing along those lines. It was seemingly obvious there if you had a glimpse of number seven for the Georgia offense on the sideline that he was not going back in this game for Georgia. I think it led many of us to wonder, and I was doing, again, this past Saturday what I'd done the previous Saturday, which was be involved in our forum at forum.dognation.com as we kind of had our game day chat going. And many of you were saying, you know, what's going on with DeAndre Swift? What's happening with DeAndre Swift? I think many of you were left to sort of speculate, and I read a lot of this at our forum, that clearly there must be some sort of injury here, some sort of something going on with DeAndre Swift if he's not in the game here. But after the game, when Dog Nation's Chip Towers, who by the way will join us in just a moment, as I said, when Chip asked Kirby about DeAndre Swift, Kirby was not very forthcoming about whatever it was is going on. Let me let you hear that audio as a part of Around the Doghouse here presented by Pella Window and Door. Take a listen.
Coach DeAndre Swift didn't play a whole lot after early receiving. Is that injury or just coach's decision?
No, I thought DeAndre played the first drive. He had the first two or three carries. I mean, we rotated pretty much after that, and then once we felt like the game was in hand, we were going to play some of those other guys who hadn't had as many carries.
I will tell you my opinion here. I don't buy for a second that DeAndre Swift didn't play anymore because the game was in hand. They wanted to get carries to other backs. You know, something about that doesn't quite ring true to me, but I won't speculate about anything beyond that. That would be unfair for me to do so if Kirby doesn't want to say. It's not my job to, make public guesses about that necessarily, but something about that doesn't quite ring true to me. And whatever, Swift's situation is heading into Missouri, that's going to remain a concern for me a bit this week. But in the aftermath of Swift not playing very much, we did get to see a good bit more of Georgia running back Elijah Holyfield. And if you're semi-concerned about why you didn't see more of Swift, the presence of Holyfield, I do think it makes you feel pretty good about this game, makes you feel pretty good about Elijah Holyfield here in particular, who we've always said around Dog Nation Daily for quite some time, if Holyfield ever got his chance, he would prove that he was certainly good enough to play. This is certainly an SEC caliber starting running back. And with a sort of handful of carries coming his way early in this game, he uses that to go north of 100 yards here on this particular Saturday. And I think for a lot of us who've wanted to see more of Holyfield for a while he's been sort of biding his time behind some running backs who are putting together sensational careers, I think the feelings we had about Holyfield were very much validated by what we saw against the Blue Raiders. And I love the words, complimentary words here from Kirby Smart about Holyfield, not just in terms of what he did against Middle Tennessee State, but what he does every single day in practice. And to go back to a word that we used a little earlier, the idea of a standard being set by Georgia, Elijah Holyfield seems to be one of those guys that sort of helps maintain that standard week to week. So nice to see him get big stats, and nice to hear Kirby Smart say things like this.
What you see is what you get. I mean, what you guys see, he's like that every day in practice. For 2 years, like I told y'all before, Sony and Nick got all the accolades and got all the credit, and deservedly so. But those kids last spring, talking about Holyfield and Harry, and they showed me right away what they had, because they got a lot of carries last spring. They handled it well, and they were really physical, and I thought we got two good backs that nobody's going to know about. And I thought Elijah showed some explosiveness today. He's really hard to tackle. He's physical. Tell you what he's got a heart of gold. He really works. He leads by example, and the other players respect Holyfield because of the way he works.
Couple things here on that. I think Kirby's right when he says, in the case of Brian Harrigan, who I've also liked what I've seen some from this year, but he and Holyfield both are two good backs that right now a lot of the country doesn't really know a whole lot about. And if you listen to the sort of the national conversation about Georgia coming into the year, there's this thought of, well, there's no way Georgia replaces Nick Chubb. There's no way Georgia replaces Sony Michel. It's just not going to happen. And yeah, I think for most Georgia fans, there was this thought that, hey, if it is Elijah Holyfield, Georgia will be fine. If it is Brian Harrigan, Georgia will be fine. And so far, that's kind of exactly what's been the case here. Because, listen, there was a time, going back to the offseason, we thought Georgia had maybe too many running backs. At least some people thought Georgia might have too many running backs. But as we've seen, whether it be whatever it was that kept Swift out of the game on Saturday, James Cook's suspension for the first half against South Carolina, Georgia hasn't had a moment yet this season where it's had too many running backs. If anything, it's only had just enough. I think Saturday, another example of that. Also, Kirby Smart uses the word explosive. It's kind of really nice to see the 66-yard run that Holyfield puts together. There was clearly some explosive moments for Holyfield here on Saturday, and I think that's a really good thing. Speaking of explosive moments, maybe not the best example of that with the spat that many of you noticed. Once again, our forum at forum.dognation.com was talking about this. A little spat between the veteran DeAndre Walker, the freshman Brenton Cox. They have some words. They have a little pushing and shoving there as they were heading off the sidelines. Kirby Smart after the game, though, for those of you that may have seen this on the TV broadcast, Kirby didn't make too big of a deal about that. He's not scandalized this by this whatsoever. Here is Kirby kind of downplaying the pushing and shoving between DeAndre Walker and Brenton Cox.
They love each other. And sometimes when you're playing football, you have spats. So sometimes when you care about somebody so much and you want them to do something right, you encourage them to do right. But they did, and we handled it internally. It's not a big deal. They're both over it, and I respect both of them, and they're great kids, and really proud of the way it was handled and the way that they both have fire. The best teams I've been around, I sat in that stadium right there and when I was in Alabama and watched two players about kill Reuben Foster because he gave up an 80-yard run to Nick Chubb, and I knew then that we had a special defense. Well, today showed me some fire and grit that regardless of the score, the standard's here. If you don't play to the standard, then you're going to be called out.
I mean, I hate to be cynical about this, but this is one of those things where if Georgia's a bad team, then this kind of moment is sort of used as an example of saying, oh, here's how dysfunctional all this looks. You got players fighting on the field. If Georgia's a good team, the same piece of evidence is used to say, here's how competitive Georgia is. You know, it's out there, you know, fighting for everything it's worth. And DeAndre Walker, Brenton Cox, another example of that. Either way, it's probably not that big of a deal, but this is one of those things you sort of get out of it what you want to, and you can sort of make this, you know, prove whatever it is that you kind of want to prove. So kind of interesting stuff from Kirby and the way that he downplays that. It's our Around the Doghouse features brought today by Pella Window and Door. And listen, Pella Window and Door can get you equipped with your house energy efficient windows and doors. They are a family owned and operated branch right here in Georgia, which means local service backed by a national company. And they've got a great offer for you right now. You can currently get 50% off qualifying installations or 0% APR for 48 months. It's valid all the way through November 8th, so make sure you take advantage of that. Pella also offers the best lifetime warranty with top of the line equipment and unparalleled expertise. So you can schedule your free in-home consultation today, and Pella's winning team will take care of everything, including your measurements. It's very easy to log on. Simply go to PellaSoutheast.us. That's PellaSoutheast.us. You can submit a few appointment dates and times that are convenient for you, and a Pella representative will call you back and confirm. You can also call the Dunwoody showroom at 404-445-2979. Let me give you that number one more time. It's 404-445-2979. Love having Pella Window and Doors here as part of Around the Doghouse each and every week here on a Dog Nation Daily. Also love having you with us as well, and I know you're going to love Chip Towers. Let's get ready to speak to him right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Always great to talk to a Chip Towers here on a Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. Great coverage from him at DogNation.com all week. Chip, welcome back to our program. Thanks for being with us here on this Monday. Hope you're doing well.
I'm doing great. Fantastic, beautiful day in Athens, and ready to get going back into the SEC, you know.
Yeah, me too.
Missouri for a big game, and I'll be glad to see Georgia maybe have something to play for in the fourth quarter. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see how that all turns out. Let me start with something you asked Kirby Smart on Saturday about DeAndre Swift. Swift plays a little bit early, then doesn't play at all. Chip, as you know, Kirby completely downplayed this in the press conference, essentially saying that there was no need to play him beyond the couple of carries that he got. Something about that doesn't quite ring true to me, but I won't speculate anything beyond just saying I'm a little skeptical of that explanation from Kirby Smart. What did you make of DeAndre Swift not playing very much on Saturday?
Well, I mean, you know, Kirby downplayed it, but, you know, in this particular case, I mean, we were all sitting there watching the game, and it wasn't just me. I mean, it's the, you know, Dog Nation readers on the forum and you know, on our Twitter feeds, and where's DeAndre? Where's Swift? You know, we're looking. I got my glasses on him. You know, he's sitting there. He's sitting on the training bench for a while. He wasn't getting attended to by anybody. Standing there with his arms folded. He was not standing next to Dell McGee. Was not about to go into the game. So the truth always lies in between. It's either just a coach's decision not to put him back in there, but there's a lot of rumblings that, you know, he may still be battling that groin pull that kept him out of spring and maybe a little bit in preseason camp. And look, Brandon, you don't know what's happening in the, I'm not saying this is the case, but in the, you know, the fever of a game, you never know if, you know, somebody says something to somebody and the coach says, you know what, why don't you just take a sit over there for a while or something. I mean, you just don't know. But the bottom line is he didn't play after the first two series. He came in the second series and didn't get back in the game. And so I don't know anything factual. We'll ask Kirby about it again today. I'm sure he probably won't, you know, tell us a whole lot about it. I would imagine if there is an injury situation to DeAndre Swift, he just assumed Missouri not know anything about it. But the fact of the matter is Elijah Holyfield, you know, and Brian Herring got most of the carries. And I wouldn't be surprised at all to see Elijah start this week because he did comport himself pretty well at the end of the day during the Middle Tennessee State game.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about a lot of Elijah Holyfield because, Chip, you know I'm a fan, and it's sort of a weird time for Georgia fans because this team has a lot of fan favorites. So on the one hand, if you're a Georgia fan, you're not seeing DeAndre Swift. You're kind of like, hey, where's Swift? I like watching him play. I'm not getting to do that very much right now. But then his absence means more carries for Elijah Holyfield, another fan favorite who Georgia fans every single day here on Dog Nation Daily. ask me, when's Holyfield going to get more carries? Well, on Saturday, you kind of saw him getting more carries. And boy, I tell you what, I think a lot of people are very satisfied by the fact that he looks the part of a guy that Georgia might be able to lean on. And you said, you know, maybe it's a closer game against Missouri. I don't know if it'll be close against Missouri, but Georgia's playing a close game at some point this year. You and I both know that. And when it does, it needs a running back that can really, really trust to get some big yards in third and five. And Elijah Holyfield, to me, kind of showed on Saturday that he's a pretty good candidate to maybe be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think he definitely can. And look, you know, I think Georgia needs to improve overall in their running game. And they're going to have to, you know, at Missouri for sure, because, you know, one of the best things you can do against the Tigers, and Georgia's done this to good effect the last several years, is run the football with authority to keep that keep Drew Locke in that offense on the sideline. So I think more, you know, Georgia likes to go fast like everybody else, but on offense. But I think probably more than any other game we've seen so far this year, I think Georgia will try to control the football and keep Drew Locke on the sideline, because obviously he's a very, very special guy. And I think it was proven in you know, Missouri's game against Purdue last week that you know, they can be run against. So I think whoever is getting the carries, whoever's the primary carrier for Georgia, is going to get a lot of opportunities. But that's the thing about this offense, Brandon. It's a great thing. There's a lot of places to put the football, a lot of deserving players. You know, Mecole Hardman needs to get his touches. I think he's proven that.
Yeah.
You know, Riley Ridley's had a great year. You know, Jeremiah Holloman, JJ, is the guy that we saw this past week finally break out a little bit. So Georgia will need to spread the football around, but I think you'll see them do that in a controlled fashion. And Elijah Holyfield can certainly be, you know, the guy who gets those tough yards between the tackles, as he's shown, you know, in the first three games.
We've got a lot more talk about the Georgia Bulldogs here coming up. Before that, though, many of you know I am a big Braves fan. I was thrilled a few days ago when the Braves go out on the road, handle the Arizona Diamondbacks, get the big performance in San Francisco against the Giants, and really put this team in a position to be in the postseason here for 2018. And now the magic number down to just 8 after the Phillies lost again on Sunday. That means with the games coming up here at SunTrust Park with the St. Louis Cardinals and the Philadelphia Phillies getting ready to close things out, the Atlanta Braves are on their way, we think, to the postseason here for 2018. Now the Braves are going to take care of their business on the field, but behind the scenes, the Braves workers already putting things in prepare for the postseason here in 2018, and you're going to want to be a part of that. On Wednesday, tickets for the postseason do go on sale, so do me a favor, go to braves.com/postseason. That website, once again, braves.com/postseason. When the Braves find out who they're going to be playing in the postseason, when they wrap up this division and get ready to move on to October baseball, you're going to want to be a part of it. It's one of the most thrilling things that happens around Atlanta. I grew up going to Atlanta Braves games in the postseason. So excited about seeing this 2018 team version back in there again as well. And you're going to want to be there as well for the first ever postseason game played there at SunTrust Park. It's going to be a lot of fun. The tickets go on sale on Wednesday. So let's watch the Braves here against St. Louis and Philadelphia over the course of the next few nights there at SunTrust Park as part of the final postseason, or I should say the final regular season homestand there for SunTrust Park, and then get ready for the postseason come up here. So braves.com/postseason, you can be a part of that. Atlanta Braves, chop on. All right, Chip, getting back to Georgia here just for a moment. One of the things I talked about before you joined us was the little spat that kind of goes down between DeAndre Walker and Brenton Cox. I'm not really scandalized by this. In a previous life, I used to go to a lot of NFL practices, especially back during the summer. And, Chip, as you know, a lot of NFL practices are sort of open the entire time. And, you know, when it's hot, you know, these guys fight with each other all the time. And I don't think, you know, a hot day between two teammates like this, I think it's kind of the same deal here. There's going to be some pushing and shoving. I'm not really too scandalized by it. Kirby Smart didn't seem too bothered by it either. What did you make of the veteran and the rookie here getting into a little bit of a heated exchange?
Yeah, I would have loved for that to be one of those NFL films moments where, you know, we can hear what everybody was saying.
Good call.
But the inference from Coach Smart was that, you know, Brenton Cox, the freshman, was being corrected by DeAndre Walker, the senior, and he alluded to a similar situation when Nick Chubb gashed the Alabama defense for an 80-yard touchdown run, which was largely meaningless late in the blowout game in 2015, how a couple of seniors lit up Reuben Foster for doing that, and he said that he liked that, you know, and he's talked about that several times about sort of the self-policing and all that. Now, you never want your players, you know, jawing or certainly putting their hands on each other during the game, and And as he said, that would be addressed internally, something he likes to say a lot. But I'm with you, Brandon. I don't think it's an alarming thing that speaks to, you know, cracks in team unity and all that kind of stuff. I mean, football, at the end of the day, it's a violent, physical sport that requires your absolute utmost exertion at every moment when you're on the field. Certainly where Georgia is concerned, that's what they pride themselves on, and in terms of having all that depth and everything. And so I'm not exactly sure what had happened previous to the play or what was said on that one, but I do believe what Kirby says, and that it was in the moment situation, and that moment is gone, and Georgia should be fine going forward.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, obviously DeAndre Walker's been around for a while. He probably does know, you know, what Georgia's trying to do defensively. But, you know, Brenton Cox, as you know, Chip, is no shrinking violet here. This is a big-time prospect coming out of high school. This is a guy that thinks he's got an NFL future. So I guess, you know, you kind of like the idea that he's got a strong personality, even if he's the wrong in the wrong in this particular argument or in this particular sort of viewpoint about how the defense should have been performing. Even if he's in the wrong, I guess that sort of strong personality, you know, a lot of Georgia fans are probably going to like, okay, you know?
Yeah, no, that's true. And you know, look, there's something to be said with how much we're seeing Brenton Cox on the field,
yep.
Right? I mean,
yep.
I think you're seeing him in third and long situations. I think he's been designated as a pass rusher for Georgia. That's a role that DeAndre Walker fulfilled, you know, his last 2 years at Georgia to pretty good acclaim. And the fact is, Georgia's not getting a whole lot of pressure on the passer right now. That's something they need improvement on. I don't care what Kirby says. He downplays it and kind of chuckles. But, Georgia's not getting enough pressure on the passer. They're not. Mike Griffith wrote about earlier today a pretty interesting stat that Georgia's opponents have more quarterback hurries against Georgia than Georgia does against their opponents. And you kind of think, you know, this would be three blowouts against overmatched opponents. That's not good. I mean, it's, you know, and it's okay to drop eight in coverage and all that, but that's not what Georgia's doing necessarily. You've got to affect the passing. I'm going to tell you right now, you can't blitz Drew Locke all out. I mean, we all understand, you know, the era that we're in with spread football and all that, but you have to affect the passer like that. You can't just let him sit back there and pick and choose his targets, you know, because he's got the type of arm and he's got the type of intellect where he can get the ball and fit the ball in to some really good receivers. So, I don't know how they're going to do it. Some of it could be given to the fact that Georgia's not doing anything elaborate from a blitz standpoint or really even a pass rush standpoint. I mean, I don't see them running a lot of twists and cross bugs and, elaborate blitzes and things like that. They'll have to get more creative this week because this is going to be a creative offense they go against and one of those – artistic type of quarterbacks. You've got to disrupt his view, or you're gonna be in trouble.
All right, since you brought that up, let me talk about it for a minute because I think that's an interesting subject. And Chip, I'm gonna be very honest here. I don't completely understand what's going on with this, both in terms of this year for Georgia and, you know, last year for Georgia, and frankly, you know, the final year of, probably Jeremy Pruitt there as well, where if you go back and look at Kirby's last defense at Alabama, Chip, they had 50-plus sacks. So, obviously, this is a defensive mind in Kirby Smart that likes to produce, sack totals. That's what he did when he was at Alabama. Last year, though, Chip, Georgia was a very good defense and still didn't get after the quarterback that much. Now, they sacked the quarterback more than they used to before Kirby got here, but still not really at a national elite level. We talked to Lorenzo Carter a lot in the offseason, kind of after his Georgia career ended. He said in the NFL that was one of the things he was sort of looking forward to doing more of because he played the star position sometimes, things like that. He just wasn't asked to do it. So, Chip, the one thing as a non-trained eye here, I'm not a former player or a former coach, I don't know how much of Georgia's somewhat mediocre sack totals are by design because this team's just trying to sort of, you know, keep the ball in front of the back seven, or if this is a deficient sort of bug in the system where Georgia's not doing this enough. It seemed to work last year without sort of an elite total of sacks. This year, Kirby Smart sort of downplaying it again. I can't tell what the real truth here is.
Yeah, I mean, I can't either, Brandon. I agree with you on all those points. I mean, I think it's clear that philosophically, you know, Mel Tucker generally likes to sort of create that shell, as they like to call it, and keep everybody underneath them. And when you have great speed and ability to strike in the second level and third level, that's a very effective strategy. I mean, you're just quicker than the other guy. And certainly last year they had Roquan Smith, you know, patrolling that second level. And every once in a while they would send them. Look, in this last game, you know, I don't know if you noticed this or not, but actually Maycrest Patrick was getting out there and lining up on the defensive end opposite of Georgia's outside linebacker pretty often, and sometimes with two other linebackers on the field. Like, so necessarily, he's not necessarily shifting out of his Mike linebacker position and going to the end position, which Georgia does do on occasion. He was lining up there as a straight defensive end. So, you know, Kirby's not going to let you know that if this is a issue that they're frantically trying to address. But I think that in and of itself is evidence that they're trying to get creative and find some ways to get some pressure on the passer. Now, that said, it is the spread era, and you just can't. It's not like it used to be. This is not the NFL. You don't have a bunch of drop back passers that are, you know, going to be down there for five counts before they release the ball. It just doesn't happen very much. They're getting the ball done. So really the only way that you're going to get in there most of the time and affect the passers if you break through clean, which means that you've got to, you know, do something. You got to outnumber their blockers at the very least to make that happen, because there's not going to be enough time to beat a block as quick as teams are getting rid of the ball nowadays.
Jim, let me finish on the other side of the ball here for a moment. At your report card at dognation.com, I believe you gave the Georgia offense a B for Saturday. I hope I've got that grade correct, but I believe that I do, yeah. A B. Jake Fromm also had, you know, some kind of, I don't want to say critical words about his offense, but he certainly didn't, you know, pretend that it was, you know, the greatest performance ever for the Georgia offense on Saturday when he spoke to reporters. I guess overall, what did you make of what Fromm had to say about the offense, what the offense did, you know, just in general on Saturday, with some bright spots, maybe kind of an uneven performance, maybe the best way to sort of describe this? What did you make of all of that?
Yeah, definitely an uneven performance. That's a good way to put it. And, you know, this is another one where I'll disagree with the coach a little bit. You know, certainly he has his objectives, but, I mean, I'm sorry. Jake's got to get rid of the ball both of those situations. You've got to recognize the pressure that you're under. Those two sacks, certainly the second one, which Kirby kind of put on Jake because he did have the ball for a good long time and he shifted out of the pocket and could have easily thrown it high out of bounds and been okay. On the one in the end zone, you just got to get rid of the football there. You know, you cannot allow yourself, no matter what's happening to the pressure, you can't allow yourself to get hit like that in the end zone. And, you know, you play in LSU or maybe even Missouri this week. I'm pretty sure, you know, one of their defenders is going to get on that ball. But it was just a sloppy day overall. There were a lot of penalties. You know, early on, Cade Mays was called for a holding. There were a couple of false start penalties, you know, a couple of drops, which we hadn't seen a lot of this year by the wide receivers. Now, I say all that, and I'll also say this. You know, it was Middle Tennessee State. It was a noon game. You cannot get your guys to play at the ultimate high level for 13 games in a year all the time. So I kind of get it that Georgia might not have been at their sharpest on Saturday, and I do believe what Kirby says and what Jake Fromm said, and several other players, Elijah Holyfield referred to it, Tyler Simmons, McCole Harmon, they'll get that cleaned up this week, and I imagine you'll see a much sharper team that shows up in Como. They'll need to be, for sure.
So let me just finish this, and I apologize for keeping you late, but there is one quick issue I want to get into before we let you go. You mentioned the couple issues that Cade Mays had. I'm always hesitant to sort of make too big of a deal out of, especially for a lineman, two plays like that, because I'm not watching the game film. I don't know what the other, you know, 50 or 60 snaps look like, you know, beyond the, you know, the one, you know, beaten pass rush, the one holding call there. But it seemed like, at least on that drive, Cade Mays didn't quite play as well as he was sort of thought to have played against South Carolina, which maybe makes you think, going on the road in the SEC versus Missouri on Saturday, that if Andrew Thomas, that ankle's not taken care of, then that could be a guy that Georgia's missing, right?
Yeah, no, I think it is. Look, I like Cade Mays, and I was impressed with him in South Carolina, and I don't think there's any question he's going to be a great player for Georgia. He's not as good as Andrew Thomas, and whether he's as good as Andrew Thomas on a gimpy ankle, I don't know. But, you know, there's an issue on Georgia's line in general. It is great to be, whether they have the Great Wall of Athens, the different nicknames that I've heard given, the human eclipse and all this kind of Georgia's line. But there is a sacrifice that comes with being that big, and generally you're not as mobile as you need to be. There are two players on Georgia's line that I think have exceptional footwork, which is really important for an offensive lineman, and that's Andrew Thomas and Lamont Gilliard. I don't think those other guys are particularly nimble. Ben Cleveland is actually can move better than he's given credit for being that gargantuan of a human being. I think Solomon Kinley is a little bit of a liability at left guard with his movement. So you add that, you know, Solomon Kinley with a guy like Cade Mays, and you're just not as nimble as you need to be on the left side of your line, I don't think. So that's something that Georgia's going to have to get addressed. Something we're going to have to watch very closely this week is the health of Andrew Thomas. Now, generally, you know, that was a significant ankle sprain. I mean, I don't have the doctor's report, but I mean, anytime you have to be helped off the field, you're being held out of practice, you're getting physical therapy. Ankle injuries can dog you for a whole season. So this is a really critical period, I think, for Georgia. Do they hustle Andrew Thomas back and just wrap up that ankle real good and try to get him back on the field for this game, or do you know you go with what you got, try to get that guy to improve a little bit? I would imagine you'd see May start, you see how it goes, and I'm sure Andrew Thomas will make the trip and be ready to play if at all possible. But that's something to pay attention to as Georgia goes to Columbia this week.
Chip, really good stuff. Thanks for your time here on a Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. I know you're going to have all kinds of coverage of Kirby Smart speaking to the media today coming up around noon, and then a whole bunch more there at adognation.com throughout the week. We really appreciate you being with us. We'll look forward to speaking to you again soon.
All right. See you later.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, really fun to get a chance to talk to Chip Towers about all the things going on with the Georgia Bulldogs. And, you know, there's an element of a game like this that's sort of semi-frustrating because you're saying, okay, so how did Georgia look in a noon start against an overmatched opponent? And how could you extrapolate that for Cade Mays and for others into a game like at Missouri next week? Or had Georgia been playing at Ole Miss the way that Alabama was? I mean, there is this beauty contest aspect of college football right now, and I guess thankfully, you know, part of the theme of today's show is that we don't have to worry about that much stuff too much longer here, that for the rest of the season, at least for the next several weeks, you know, it's simply about getting the job at hand done at Missouri, you know, then Tennessee, then at LSU beyond that. And you know, if there's no Andrew Thomas for Georgia against the Tigers on Saturday, with all due respect to Cade Mays, who I do think is going to have an outstanding Georgia career and one day going to make a lot of money in the NFL, as of right now, the veteran Andrew Thomas is still the better choice for Georgia, the left tackle position. And so we'll see how that plays out here as Georgia deals with the injury to Thomas here and getting the rest of its offensive lineman kind of up to speed with everything that's going to be kind of going on there. Let me shift gears here, do our SEC through, and, you know, it was kind of fun to be at the UGA bookstore on Saturday for our Northside Hospital Sports Medicine postgame show, where so many of you had just had your eyes and attention glued to that game between Auburn and LSU there. And then, you know, being downtown a little bit after the game on Saturday as well, everybody was just sort of, you know, hooping and hollering when Auburn lost. Obviously, Georgia fans like it when the Tigers take one on the chin. That happened on Saturday. And I guess I probably need to say this before I say anything else about the game. This is not what I expected to go down. I did not anticipate Auburn losing this game, and certainly didn't even anticipate it really being all that close. I thought this was the kind of moment where Auburn could sort of step up and play big at home in kind of a big spot here, and that does not happen. Now, you know, when you're in Athens and you got, you know, the TV's down and, you know, it's sort of an anti-Auburn crowd, it's sort of hard to get the full take on this. The pass interference call that leads to the LSU game-winning field goal, is that thought to be a good, reasonable call? Is there a legitimate beef criticism with the pass interference call there? So it sounds like some folks here in the room kind of thought that was an okay call. I don't have a problem with it necessarily either. I mean, my thought here is, if you're an Auburn fan and the only thing that you can say in response to this is the pass interference call shouldn't have happened on the final drive, Auburn's still a 10-point favorite here. You know, don't let this come down to one sort of, you know, bang-bang play on a pass interference call in terms of, You know, can you survive against LSU here? Auburn's supposed to be the better team. They're supposed to be playing at Jordan-Hare Stadium, which is supposed to be a, you know, a house of horrors for the opposition. For LSU on Saturday, that was not the case. Some of y'all are going to be all over me about Jared Stidham here, because for 2 years I've been talking about how good I think that Stidham can be for Auburn. On Saturday, he really wasn't. Threw a couple picks. not a great completion percentage on the day. This was not Stidham at his best, and it kind of fits in with what you saw last year from Auburn during the month of September. You know, he gets sacked 11 times against Clemson. Auburn was a better team in November than it was in September. Now, you like to improve over the course of a year, but you don't want to have the same thing happen over and over again where you have slow starts to seasons. But here offensively, I think it's true for Auburn once again. I mean, frankly, I don't think the offense looked that great against Washington week one, even though it was a win against a top 10 team. So problems with the Auburn offense once again. And boy, I was listening to some Alabama sports radio this morning. I mean, Malzahn's getting a lot of criticism right now. A lot of criticism, probably justifiable for, you know, here's, I guess, the sort of faint praise you'll give Auburn, and this sort of tells you the whole story here. I still think Auburn's a dangerous opponent. Dangerous for Georgia in November. Dangerous for Alabama, even though that game's in Tuscaloosa. But right now, that's all Auburn is. They're just a dangerous opponent. They're not more than that. They're not a legitimate national championship contender themselves. They're just a dangerous opponent, and you blame Gus Malzahn for that. On the LSU side of things here for a moment, RIP in peace. If you were waiting on getting your LSU tickets for the Georgia game until after they sort of went down a little bit, I don't think the secondary market's going to be kind to you. If you're looking to be in the building there in Death Valley on October 13th, they are probably skyrocketing here. You could have a battle of undefeated teams, very highly ranked, national marquee type game. LSU still got Mississippi State to tangle with between now and then. But that LSU-Georgia game is looking huge right now. I still don't think LSU's a great team, though. I think that Joe Burrow is a better quarterback than LSU has had. I think he's better than Danny Etling, with apologies to our buddy Brad Nessler, who sort of suggested otherwise last week. But this is not a great team yet. Georgia's still a point spread favorite in that game. A couple other quick thoughts to get to. I sort of said my piece on Alabama-Ole Miss a little earlier. 62-7. I think there's an exchange rate here. That's a little bit like Canadian dollars to me. You're playing against a defense in Ole Miss that has a lot more in common with its brethren to the West, you know, Big 12 style, than it does the rest of the SEC here. It's fine. You know, Alabama's going to just get praise heaped and heaped on top of it. Maybe it deserves it. I'm not going to lose my mind because they won 62-7. I'm just not. Missouri struggles with Purdue on Saturday. I think that tells you all you need to know about Missouri. It's an interesting road test for Georgia, but it is not necessarily the kind of thing where I think Missouri is good enough to challenge Georgia at all. I think when you go to West Lafayette and you're in a dogfight all day long, I think that tells you everything you need to know right there. Let me also say this. Florida kind of handles our buddy Mike Bobo in Colorado State on Saturday, but Chris Dorsey, the former Gator receiver who's now an analyst for the SEC Network, he's also a friend of our program here on our Dog Nation Daily, I thought he had a very interesting tweet after this game. We'll make this our final story for the SEC through here. With a word of caution for Florida fans who maybe made too big of a deal about week one make too big of a deal about another blowout win against a mediocre opponent, here's Chris Doering kind of suggesting, hey, this may not be as great as it looks. He says, while there was improvement offensively, this is Chris Doering talking, Gators fans, don't be fooled by the score against Colorado State. Quarterback is late on most throws. Doesn't anticipate. Wide receivers can't separate versus man coverage. Offensive line had more to do with the opponent. The running back rotation needs to still be tweaked, and Kadarius Toney still needs more touches. Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you enjoy the play, I guess, for Chris Doering there? But kind of funny to hear the former Florida wide receiver, a very good play and a terrific analyst, saying Florida fans don't make too much out of a win like that, and we'll make that your SEC through. And back here on a Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza, as we turn our attention to the Georgia Bulldogs, let's do so by awarding our R.S. Andrews Cool Under Pressure Performer of the Week. And who else could we go with for this particular Saturday than Mecole Hardman, who finally broke through and got that punt return for a touchdown we've been looking for him to get for a while, especially on the heels of the first 2 weeks of the season where he looked very good as a wide receiver. He's quickly becoming a dominant playmaking weapon here for the Georgia Bulldogs, and Kirby Smart after the game was very happy to see Hardman be able to take that one to the house. Here's Kirby.
We felt like if the kid gave us a kick that we could return, that we were going to have a house call. We had all talked about it. We had all said it was going to happen this game, and it happened. So it comes from a lot of reps went into that.
So a house call is kind of a cool catchphrase type thing for a Kirby Smart. That's what McCole Hardman had a chance to do. He was able to take that one all the way back. And as Kirby Smart explains, you know, we're going to give all the credit here to McCole Hardman. He is our R.S. Andrews Cool Under Pressure Performer of the Week. But when you look at what Hardman does there, even though he makes some guys miss, make sure you also give some credit to the other 10 guys in the field who enabled that to happen, including more praise for some wide receivers who've been very physical for UGA this year. Here's more from Kirby.
We work really hard on that. Miko works really hard. We spend so much time in practice. And the sad thing is the guys that don't get the credit are the guys that do all the blocking up front. But Miko didn't get touched for the first 10, 15 yards. And a lot of that has to do with Jason Stanley and Tyler Simmons, who I continue to rave about with their selflessness and their ability to block. Those two guys do on punt return what very few guys in the country can do, which is win one-on-one battles.
So listen, I mean, the subliminal messages from Kirby Smart about wide receivers right now are pretty overwhelming. When he just goes on and on talking about how physical some receivers are, you can sort of hear the sort of deafening silence about some other receivers. So take that for what you will there. But a good job by Tyler Simmons and Jason Stanley opening that up for McCole Hardman. Another highlight play for Hardman here for Georgia through 3 weeks of the season. He is our R.S. Andrews Cool Under Pressure Performer of the Week. And speaking of R.S. Andrews, you know those guys who skip the lines of the game, get all the VIP access and beat the crowd and they get all the great seats? Well, that's what R.S. Andrews can provide for you with its R.S. Andrews Fall Furnace Checkup. It's $99. That's all it is, and it gets you the coverage you need to keep you safe. Inspecting your heat exchanger for leaks, checking filters, your flu and vents. R.S. Andrews gets your system ready to be factory fresh and everything you need for $99. So get the great seats, get that great seats feeling right now by getting the Fall Furnace Checkup from the ones we trust, R.S. Andrews, online at rsandrews.com. And congratulations to McCole Hardman, the Georgia punt returner, for being our R.S. Andrews Cool Under Pressure for Performer of the Week. And by the way, speaking of our friends from R.S. Andrews, our buddy Darif there from R.S. Andrews is going to be a part of our Dog Nation invasion to Baton Rouge coming up in October. If you want to be a part of that as well, don't forget you can still go and sign up at dognation.com for your chance to be a winner courtesy of Marlowe's Tavern. And don't forget this upcoming Thursday, we're actually going to give away a Dog Nation invasion trip courtesy of our friends at Marlowe's there at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven on Thursday. Yes, that's going to be really fun from 6 to 8 p.m. This upcoming Thursday, September the 20th, at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven, 3575 Durden Drive in Atlanta. 3575 Durden Drive in Atlanta for our Marlowe's big game preview. Mike Gerfeth is going to be on the hand. We'll talk a lot of dogs with you, and we're going to give away our Dog Nation invasion trip courtesy of our friends at Marlowe's Tavern. And I'm glad to have the folks from R.S. Andrews coming along with us for that as well. All right, let's get ready to wrap up here today. Let me start by doing our Dog Nation Daily Gator Hater Countdown. You know, we believe around this program that a good Georgia fan is a Gator Hater first and foremost. And 40 days from right now, Georgia travels back to Jacksonville, beats Florida again. We're excited about that. We think 40 days from right now, Gator Hater Countdown right here on our Dog Nation Daily. Let me also say this, speaking of the Florida Gators, you may have seen some video. I know many of you shared this with me on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily of Dan Mullen trying to do a little dance after the game in the locker room on Saturday after Florida beat Colorado State. And it sort of took him a while to get some players sort of fired up to want to dance with him, and they finally did. And the whole thing looked sort of cheesy and corny. I guess if you gave me a choice of seeing two Georgia players fight on the field while blowing out Middle Tennessee State or a Florida coach dancing in the locker room after beating Colorado State, I guess I'll take guys fighting and competitive fire over celebrating a win that's frankly not worth celebrating. So I guess take that for what you will, and I'll see you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily.